get the blue one today. There. I don't think they hear me any better than they did without it. Oh. We're glad you're here. This is the number 4 in our series of Introducing God. And it will be our last one. It isn't that we ran out of material. That'll be the day you run out of material on God. But it's run its course for what we wanted to accomplish, and that's we're glad of that. And we hope that you've been here for all of it. If not, quick synopsis. We started with Elohim, in the beginning, God. And it says so much. God, Elohim, created. Every sunset, every sunrise, all the air I breathe, all the water I drink, the mountains are beautiful, the waves of the ocean pound on the coast, and it's all about Him. A beautiful creation, He says, it is good. It didn't always stay good, but it wasn't because God did not create it to be good. And I've always thought of that, and then I look at heaven. This is free, by the way, this is on the side. And God says, if you think creation is good, heaven's unbelievable. He said, it's never even crossed your mind. It's never even entered your imagination. Everybody says, well, I think I know what heaven's about. We don't know that much about heaven. It's so way beyond us. God has something so blessed, so different, so wonderful, that the children of God will be in wonderment forever. It's not just good, it's stupendous. There are no words for it. Then we talked about Jehovah. He is the one who is to be. I am that I am, He says to Moses. We find Him to be the one who makes covenants, the one who reaches out to His people, where Elohim is the creator of all general things, including man, all of creation. Jehovah, the name Jehovah attached to God, specifically funnels down and is directed at and focuses on people. And so there is much to say about Jehovah. And we said it's an unpronounceable word. It's a word that we had to kind of put some things together to come up with. So it's a little bit made up because the actual pronunciation, J-W-H-W. Is that right? I think so. No vowels anyway. You can't say it. And it's lost its pronunciation, but we have added some vowels in order to give it a name. And we speak of Yahweh, we speak of Jehovah, but in all of that, He is the God who makes His covenants with His people. And then we talked about El Shaddai, and we had the song sung, and what a beautiful song it is. But God is all sufficient. He's the provider. He's the one who provides and sees and takes care of His people. He is sufficient. And along with that, He is almighty. What He purposes to do, He will do. You can depend on it. You can trust on it. Trust in it. It's as good as done. Today, in the time we have, and we're going to move right along, Jehovah Jireh. What a wonderful name this is. Taken from Genesis 22. Now here's the way it's going to work. I'm not very orthodox. But what I want to do in the time that we have is we're going to read the text. As we do, we will make some comments along the way. So I may read one word, two words, 10 verses, but we'll take time out along the way, make some comments until we get to where we want to be, and then it'll take off from there. So now you know what's going to happen. Verse 1. Some time later, well, time out. See, we didn't get very far, did we? Sometime later from what? Well, sometime later, from God El Shaddai making the promise that Abraham and Sarah would have a son in spite of their old age, Isaac is born, the son of promise, and here he is, he's growing up. So it's sometime later, having this blessed child born to them and all the blessings that come with a newborn, and watch this young man grow and develop. And then God comes on the scene and says, sometime later, God tested Abraham. Now, if you're anything like me, you don't like tests. Kids don't like tests. They say, well, we have school, and what's going to happen? Well, we're having a test. God tested Abraham. He said, Abraham, here I am. Take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about. Now, if that doesn't startle you, if that wouldn't take your breath away, can you see Abraham taking a step backward? Did I hear you right? Could you repeat that? Surely this isn't right. A lot of people have had trouble with this passage because as we read through it and what God has asked Abraham to do, someone says, well, God's bloodthirsty and he's mean and he's out of character. He prohibits human sacrifice. So what in the world is he doing here? Well, that's what we need to find out, because it's more than offering a sacrifice. There's a bigger picture. There's more to this than just reading this first part and then drawing some conclusions and say, well, I think God is awful. Having our faith tested is scriptural, is it? There's a reason for testing. And the idea of testing is the idea of stressing something or refining something to make it stronger or more pure. In other words, God's testing here is not to break Abraham, but to make Abraham. He was Abram, and we've changed his name to Abraham. He was exalted father, and now he's the father of many nations. He now has the son that God has given to him, but God might say to him, is your son of promise more important to you than me? Well, mothers would say, I have to think about that. This is a tough choice. Life is about choices, is it not? Sure it is. We know that what the test is about, because later on we get to the ending. You ever try to read the end of the book first? My wife tells me her sister does that. And I say, why would I do that? I want to read a good mystery. I don't want to read the end first and know who did it and then back up and fill in the blanks. It loses all of its whodunit. I want to read through it page by page and try to figure it out and then be surprised at the ending. But if we go to the ending, we can figure out what this is about, because he says at the end, when it's over with, he said, now I know you truly fear God. So God's test isn't to find out what he's going to do. God already knows what he's going to do. The test is to find out, through stress, God is testing Abraham's faith, because what he wants is Abraham's heart. That's what he wants from all of us. 1 Peter chapter 1, James chapter 1, all speak of us having trials. Count it pure joy when you have trials. 1 Peter says the trials are tests that refine us like gold and bring us to that character that God is looking for. We do not really know ourselves. We're just like Peter when the Lord said to Peter, Satan's asked to sift you. But when you get well, when you've turned, when you've bailed out of this thing, when you've landed on your feet, then I want you to feed my sheep. But he said in the start, you've been asked, that Satan has asked to test you, sift you. Because the premise has always been, all the way from the book of Job on through, the premise has always been, you have a price for which you will give up God. What is it? That's the devil's premise. So that's what, when we open Job, that's what we find. He said, sure, he serves you because you bless him, take care of him. Look, he's got all these camels and donkeys and sheep and whatever. He said, you take that away from him and he'll curse you. What is he saying? He said, that's his price. But it wasn't his price. So he came back and said, well, his health is the price. So his health deteriorates into boils. But that wasn't the price, because God kept saying, he's still there. He's still my man. He still trusts in me. You aren't going to break him. What's your price? Esau's price was a pot of stew. He'd give up his birthright for that. What would cause you to give up God? Well, you say, well, you know, if I lost everything, could I endure that? I think so. Most of us started out with nothing to start with. So we're just kind of back at starting. Lose our health? We're going to get old anyway. I see old all over here. Not up here, but out there. Sure, that's going to happen. But what could possibly happen that would be the price when you would turn your back on God? Abraham has received a blessed son for which everything hinges on him, because in him is all the promises of God wrapped up of how all nations will be blessed, which includes us, by the way. So we have an interest in Isaac. Along with Abraham. Maybe not the direct interest that he had, but we have an interest in what happens to Isaac, because through Isaac is going to come the blessings that we're enjoying right this morning. And God said, I want you to go up and sacrifice him. We don't know what our choices and what choices we would make until we reach difficult times. The soldier can stand in line and say, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir, wave at the flag, march, and do all the right things and go through all the training, and say, I'm gonna serve my country. But when the bullets start flying, when the bombs start landing, when people around me are in agony because they're dying, where's the breaking point then? Well, many a soldier has faced those kind of difficult situations, and maybe some of you here who have served in the military, and we thank you for that, men and women. But there's a choice there that takes us right to the breaking point. Would we give up? Will we run? Will we stay? Will we stand? Will we fight? Those are choices. Abraham, I want you to sacrifice your son. Early the morning, Abraham got up, saddled his donkey, took with him his two servants, his son Isaac, and when he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place that God had told him about. And on the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. Then comes these words, we will worship, and then we will come back to you. Has someone whispered the end of the story to him? No. Where would he get the idea that we're coming back? We. Would he not say, I will be back? Isaac's not coming back. Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac. You know, the wood, the word wood here is the same word in that is used in Acts 5 when Peter talks about the cross carried by Jesus. Same word. Here's the wood being carried by the son. There's the cross being carried by the son. Here's the love of a son being sacrificed. What do we see in John 3:16? The love of the love for the world is a sacrifice of the sacrificing of the son. Correlation, isn't there? Put the wood on him. He carried the fire and the knife, and as the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father, Abraham, father, yes, my son, the fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. Who told him that? Where did he get that assurance? That wasn't in the instructions. The instructions didn't say, you carry out all of this, and when you get right there, things will change. He wasn't told about that. God's way ahead of us. God's way ahead in this story. God's already figured it out. He already has a plan. He already has the agenda. It's going to happen a certain way, and it's going to happen in God's timing. But in the meantime, Abraham is walking by faith. He trusts God. God himself will provide the offering. Let me read something to you. This is from Hebrews 11. By faith, Abraham, when God tested him, that's what we're reading, offered Isaac as a sacrifice. He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son. It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Abraham reasoned. Faith is reasonable. Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead. He didn't reason there's going to be a ram in the thicket. He didn't reason that God's going to have a different plan at the end of this venture. His reasoning was, even if I slay my son, God is so true to his promises, so faithful to his agenda. He is El Shaddai, Elohim, Jehovah, Jehovah Jireh, that it's going to work out even if God has to raise him from the dead. Woo! I don't know where he got faith, but we got to get in line. Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead, and figuratively speaking, he did receive Isaac back from the dead because he had, as the story is going to take us to, he has the knife in his hand. When he reached the place God told him about, Abraham built an altar there, arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac, laid him on the altar and on top of the wood. Then he reached out with his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord shouted, called out, from heaven. Boy, when you get news from heaven, you better listen up. Ha. Whew. Abraham, here I am. Do not lay a hand on the boy. Do not do anything to him, because now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. Now, what do you mean only son? Couldn't have been Ishmael. Ishmael was a son, but he wasn't the son of promise. He didn't ask for possessions. Abraham had a lot of possessions, but it wasn't about possessions. If you think it's about possessions, I want you to know God already owns all your possessions. They belong to him to start with. They're on loan to you, and you better be a good steward of them, because they really are his. It's about a son, an only son, a promised son. Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket, he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram, sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the place, the Lord will provide. Now, if you have a King James, you have what words? He called it Jehovah Jireh. And so goes our songs. Your only son whom you love. Did you know? Bit of trivia here. Put it in your pocket. Take it home. Think about it. It's the first time in the Bible that the word love is used. That was free. You can check it with Snoops.com or something like that if it does you any good. But isn't it interesting that it's tied to your son, your only son, whom you love? Jehovah Jireh. God sees. God provides. God sees your need ahead of time. In the Latin, it would be pro before, vision meaning to see, or video. He sees it beforehand. And the implication is, if you see it beforehand, he makes provision for it. How often we have said, well, I saw that coming. I saw that going to happen. You could just see the way things were working out. I knew that was what's going to happen. Well, what is it like for the Creator, for Jehovah God, who sees from the beginning to the end? There is nothing out there that surprises him. There's nothing out there that catches him off guard. And as we've talked about before, when it speaks of different ones trying to tell me about God being good or bad or weak or something like that, some of the books that are written that detract from the powerful God that I serve and make him something into a God who cannot deal with everything, so that evil, as it grows and mushrooms, and surely it does, and surely it is, that it gets out of control and he can't control it. I don't think so. He's Jehovah Jireh. And he provides ahead of time. Let's just look at this for a moment and we're done. A ram caught in a thicket. When you go through the dark moments of life, or the challenging moments of life, or the unknowns hit you, or you're on a venture that you don't know what tomorrow brings, look around sometimes. There may be a ram caught in the thicket. God's way ahead of you. God's already got things out there that are going into place. Let me give you an illustration. And I usually don't tell personal stories, but I'm going to tell a couple. 3, 4, 5, or 10. Well, you get to... Here's a book, Telling on God. You ever see this? Put out by Bill Paul right there. Compilation of stories. 1967, Bill. That was a bit ago. You know, a whole bunch of stories. Personal stories. Testimonies. Of how God worked in their lives. Telling on God. You know, we're so... If you're looking at the worldly side, you're going to see all the bad things in this world. But if you're looking through God's glasses or seeing things from the eternal side, a God awareness, God is wonderful. He's doing wonderful things for you every day. And you're not even aware of it. Sometimes that all of a sudden you just, there it is. You say, oh, God did that. He's very interested in you and me. When I was 15, I left home, was taken out of my home. I was taken to a place riding with someone that I'd only known for a week or two, going to a state I'd never been, taking on a venture that who knew what tomorrow would bring. I skipped the last 2 years of high school, and there I went. I had $10 in a suitcase, and I had about 3.5 to 4 hours that I knew that I was going. So it was a quick launch. I got up into Tennessee, and it just seemed like, you know, you start thinking, this is happening really fast. Am I doing the right thing? Is God with me? Is this what I'm supposed to do? You're 15? I had $10 in a suitcase. Now, any of you that want to run away from home and you're tired of your parents and you're tired of what's going on with you, I'll increase it to $100 and a suitcase. And you take off and let's see what comes of you. Well, without God, it's going to be a disaster. I can tell you that. But I went into a store there, a small little store in White Bluff, Tennessee, and I had been thinking about how God was working or not working or whether I was doing the right thing. And I went there to buy a razor. I had to shave early in those days. It just keeps growing. And I walked around the corner, and there on the floor was a $10 bill. Now, it didn't say Jehovah Jireh on it, but it might as well have. I picked it up, took it up front, gave it to the cashier. She says, if no one claims it in 3 days, it's yours. I wasn't going to be there 3 days. We were traveling through. But it didn't matter. It wasn't having the $10 that was important. It was finding the $10. And I haven't found $10 since. But it was the right moment, at the right time, at the right amount, at the right place, because he's Jehovah Jireh. 3 days later, we met that family up in Indiana at a rally, and they gave me that $10 because no one claimed it. You know, when we were in college, my wife and I, we had our daughter, little daughter, baby daughter, growing up daughter. We'd reached a point we had no provisions. We had no milk. We had no bread. We had nothing. Didn't know what we were going to do there in our little apartment. Refrigerator couldn't have been more empty. And a letter came in the mail, just a little card. It said, thinking of you, praying for you, signed Bill and Bethel Paul, with a $5 bill. It could have said Bill and Bethel Paul and Jehovah Jireh. Now, what God put on their heart, I don't know. Were they rich? Absolutely not. I was their neighbor. I lived in their house. I ate at their table. But days before, God had put it on their heart to send us a card of encouragement with $5 that arrived the day we needed milk. When we came off the Indian Reservation, northern Minnesota, to Minneapolis, we had nothing and no place to stay. We stayed with some friends, and finally we came across the house that was there, and it said for sale. And I may not have all the details right, but you're going to get the story anyway. We went to see these people. We said, we don't have any money down. We don't have anything, but we need to place a house. And as I remember, the man was a teacher and his wife, and they opened up that house and we moved in. We made every payment, we paid off the house, and then the teachers, he and his wife said this, we don't know why we did that. It didn't make any sense. Looking back on it, here two vagabonds is what we were, with nothing. There was no reasonable business sense that would say, rent this house to these people who can't make any down payment. All they can do is move in. Why did we do that? And why did we sell that house to you? And you made all your payments to us until it was paid for. We don't know why we did that. I do. His name is Jehovah Jireh. Quick reading. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This is a very dark time right now. One more quick story. Many years ago, my wife knows exactly how many, we were at the hospital because my son, my only son, had shot himself. And he was hanging on for dear life, in and out of surgery, for something like 10 days before he went to be with the Lord. Though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, you're with me. And God saw us through that. Is it still dark? Sure. But God's always been with us. In the time I was 15, left home, found a $10 bill. Until today, he's the same. Today, tomorrow, forever. He is Jehovah Jireh. He is Jesus. And he cares.